It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. This is Barry Hess sitting in. We've got on the line with us Darren Wolf from good old Focus on Peace. Now, his blog spot, I wanted to make sure I got this in there for you, Darren, is it fopeace.blogspot.com?
That's correct, yes. fopeace.blogspot.com.
Okay, well, you know, we had some breaking news coming in, and that was from the rally earlier this morning. There were some people arrested. Can you tell us about what happened?
Yes, the people that were arrested were part of the civil disobedience squad, let's call them that. It was at the Lockheed Martin facility that we talked about. They do this on a fairly regular basis, and I think they make a good point that they just want to deliver a message, and they're not allowed to. They try to walk to the front door, and sure enough, they get arrested.
What did they get arrested for? What was the charge?
You know, to be honest, I'm not positive. It might be trespass, disorderly conduct, something like that. These are the kind of charges that usually just, they take people down to the head of the police station, and then charges basically go away.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a scare tactic, or it's a remove the head of the snake, the opposition kind of a tactic where they try to cart you off, at least hold you up for a period of time. The tactics are just getting so old and outdated that we all know exactly what's going on. Do you think that has any effect on the guys who want to preserve the system as it is?
The people in power, you mean?
Exactly.
As long as people are being good and obedient, they're just fine. You know, they're happy to let us make a little noise and things like that. And so that's how I can have Focus on Peace, and I'm not out in Siberia or something.
I remember what really got Aaron Russo's panties in a bunch was these when they had the free speech zones. That was a hoot. You know, I mean, here you can protest, but nowhere where we can see you.
Yeah, that's true. That is an odd one. The free speech here, but not there.
Michael Badnarik, right? Yep. Michael and I actually were down in Philadelphia trying to get arrested for speaking outside of the protest area, the little chain link fence area. And we refused to go in, but we continued our protest. We were begging them to arrest us, and they wouldn't arrest us. We're going, come on, do your job. Come on. This will be fun. And they didn't know how to act because, you know, that was their big threat. And when we're asking for it, it's no longer a threat. So they got to resort to something else. And they did say, well, we'll threaten you with loitering or some other nonsense. But that's part of the game. So at least people are noticing that you're there. That's the important thing.
Can I say a couple things about Focus on Peace?
Absolutely. Go ahead. It's all yours.
Oh, thanks. So one of the things that I came to realize in working with the left-wing peace movement is that they limit themselves by putting up all these different issues. You'd be surprised at the number of people who are actually sympathetic to the politically neutral idea. I've actually talked to a number of people in the Green Party who are like, yes, this is great. you know, this is what we need. They work with the Libertarian Party on ballot access. Maybe that makes them more open to working with other ideologies on other things. Also, there was a big anti-war rally in New York on April 9th. And there, I was really surprised. Somebody from an organization called Brooklyn for Peace came charging up to me after I handed her a flyer, and she had a chance to read it. And she was like, this is fantastic. You know, this is exactly the kind of thing we need to do. So it's all work together. And I went to their website, and they talk about social justice and working with the UN and things like that. They seem like mainstream liberals, but she was also saying that she was tired of this extreme left approach to the peace movement, to anti-war. Adam Kokesh recently interviewed somebody, I think Jake Berto, if I remember the name correctly, who described himself as a conservative, said, I'm for peace, I'm anti-war, but he's like, I'm not going to go join these guys who are, you know, running around in Che Guevara t-shirts, that kind of thing. You know, that's the response has been great, to the focus on peace idea. So I'm very much looking forward to the future as to how, you know, to be able to reach out to more and more people and really grow a movement that can hopefully get something done.
But in many ways, our government has just become like the drunken husband. It just wants to beat us, you know, and that's what it sees as normal. And whereas some of us are just going, what's wrong with peace? What do you have against peace? And they can't answer it, but they sure do want to go to war.
Well, that they do. Remember, war is the health of the state.
Yeah.
Warren wrote about it years ago.
Except those individuals who are cast into harm's way recklessly, like they have been. I am amazed that the American people haven't said, hey, stop putting our people in harm's way. They haven't. They've said, nah, what the heck, we only lost a few. They become a number. And I'm thinking there are a lot of parents who their kids are not referred to by number.
I would hope not. Matter of fact, I met Cindy Sheehan back in on April 9th over in New York.
Oh.
And when you bring that up, then yeah, I'm surely, that really drives home, you know, that these are real people that are out there dying. So we have to do something about it. We can't just sit by and let them keep getting away with it. One other thing about Focus on Peace that I'd like to bring up, again, if I may, I am looking to open chapters in different cities. A lot of peace movements, they start out as a local thing, and they kind of have a few people locally, and they do their thing locally. But we really need to think more nationwide or even internationally. So, you know, people can go to the website, you know, there's contact information, and, you know, if people want to get started with something like Focus on Peace in their hometown, doesn't matter where, West Coast, East Coast, in the middle, you know, I'm happy to hear from you and do everything I can to get started.
Well, we'll make sure we get a link up on Freedom's Phoenix for you so that people who are interested can come look. They can click on the link and join a great cause. Between you and James, you guys have really done something that maybe you won't even realize the significance of it until some time has passed. But there will be somebody there that you touched who can do something and will do something.
I sure hope so. And I'm very encouraged. You know, we have had several actions where we've gone out and held up signs and things like that. Matter of fact, just last Saturday, we teamed up with the Student Liberty Front that was mentioned earlier, and we actually stood out there in the rain holding up the signs that say Honk for Peace in the university area of Philadelphia. The horns were blowing constantly. I was amazed at how great the response was.
The best part
was not one single insult.
Well, I think people are paying a lot more attention. And that's going to be the real telltale, is to see what they do with it. Because I see the American people as being very distracted by the economy and the effect in their own home on their finances. I had one guy who put it well. He said, I'm just trying to keep up with the past dues, on all of the bills. And it's tough out there. But as it gets tougher, I think that's where people's focus will zero in on. And hopefully they'll just start doing what I've said all along, is just say no to war, to government intrusion, to illegal theft, of course, of your resources. And we're going to be back. We're closing up here this segment. We're going to be back with Darren Wolf, and we'll finish her up. Just a few moments from now. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. Do it today.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Victim of this and victim of that, all kinds of victims out there these days. And we're on with someone who says, don't be a victim anymore. We're on with Darren Wolf, co-founder of WeWon'tFly.com. And he's obviously the main guy with Focus on Peace. Darren, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here. Focus on Peace. That's right.
And your blog spot is FOPEACE, F-O-P-E-A-C-E. .blogspot.com. Is that right?
That is correct. That's the website, and there's contact information there. As I was saying before, if, you know, people want to get involved, please contact us. We're very happy to hear from you.
Fantastic. Well, you guys are doing a great job down there. Is there something you wanted to add to what we've been talking about? And we'll get on with it.
Yes. One thing that I do like to say is, and I'm not sure how many people listening to this are really applies to, but I always call on the left when I have a chance to. I say that they should stop tacking on to their anti-war activism the whole social and economic agenda that you know, so many other people can't agree with. You know, that I don't think they even realize how much that drives people away. Even people somewhat on the left, too. They can't, you know, they put up so many different issues. It's like a filter screening people out. And it weakens the anti-war movement when being seen as for peace and being anti-war is seen as being far left. A lot of people say, well, okay, I don't like the wars, but I don't want to be seen as some, you know, radical leftist or something like that. They back away from trying to do anything about it.
That's part
of what motivated me to start Focus on Peace. On the other side, you have groups like Campaign for Liberty or the Libertarian Party, Constitution Party. And they advocate what they advocate, and they're very open about it. They're not trying to say that we're a peace movement, but we advocate sound money. They say, okay, we're advocating these different things, and part of what they advocate is peace. And that's fine. That's great. But then again, people on the left, even a lot of mainstream people, aren't going to join them because they don't agree with the entire agenda. And that's exactly where I think the need is for something that everybody can join. You don't feel like you're endorsing somebody else's agenda when you want to go out and stand for peace.
That's a very good point. You know, and it's funny because I actually got the endorsement from a group of greenies here in Arizona during an election cycle. And I had stayed and talked with them. And what we discovered, about 40 of them stayed after a speaking event. And we stayed for hours, and they were asking questions. And what we discovered was that libertarians are the greenest of green, whereas we have a principle. You can't pollute beyond your property's edges, your borders. That's pretty simple. And yet they didn't quite grasp that, because you wouldn't need anybody to control that. I mean, it would be obvious on its face. And so they're all into the pre-control part. And when we discovered that actually the people running, like the Green Party, for instance, tend to be very controlling. It's sort of like the liberal movement being very pro-war. It's not what it's supposed to be.
This is very true. This is very true. We all have sometimes different concepts of what makes for peace. And, for example, on the left, they say you're not really for peace unless you're for social justice and all these other things. That's the only way to have peace. And whereas on the libertarian side, we're going to say, well, libertarianism is about non-aggression. If you're not consistently against non-aggression, then you can't be for peace. And, you know, like if you endorse taxation, you know, that's aggression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we all have our different points of view. I'm trying to kind of cut through that, where we all agree that we shouldn't be out going, you know, we shouldn't be out around the world fighting all these wars and hurting all these people. That let's put the other things aside. You know, we can debate that stuff when we stop the war. Let's not have these other things be things that divide us and allow the government to continue to kill people all over the place.
Yeah, if government just stops hurting people, would be a mega step forward.
It wouldn't be government anymore.
Well,
really, you know, that day comes, you know, then we will have arrived in paradise.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a lot of the people who are so afraid of the word anarchy, and it's the opposite of the word chaos, and yet they completely confuse the two. I mean, chaos is a destructive disarray, and anarchy is the lack of a need for government. And a lot of people don't understand. That means we all know how to act. You know, you shouldn't steal stuff. You shouldn't break stuff. And you shouldn't kill people. Pretty simple stuff. And that's why it's so hard for other politicians to argue with libertarians, is because we don't put ourselves out there as a target. We put our principles out. Make them fight the principle. That's fun. And that's the most uncomfortable place if you're a Republican Democrat. That's the most uncomfortable place to be, is when you have to stand on principle, because none of them are consistent.
Well, of course, if they don't have a sex scandal or some kind of corruption to talk about, then all of a sudden they don't have anything to say.
Yeah, and I'm so surprised at the American public putting up with what I call the Jimmy Swaggart syndrome. You know, it goes something like this. Do as I say, but don't watch me too close. Because all of them, it seems, their issue, and I'm talking elected representatives, these people, their so-called issues that is so dear to their heart, oftentimes they are the ones who are violating the very things that they're railing against.
Yes, and actually, you know, that's a very good point that you bring up. And that ties into the idea that both Republicans and Democrats are very warlike. I mean, if you go back to 2000, George Bush, was talking about a humble foreign policy. He didn't believe in nation building and things like that. I mean, he was almost sounding like Ron Paul in some ways, you know. But well, we see how that turned out. The defense budget went way up. We started two wars under his administration, and then of course along comes Obama. Oh, great peacemaker, you know. He's a liberal. He's for peace. He's going to end the wars. Well, you know. We're actually fighting a third war now, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, Darren, give me your thoughts on this. How is it possible that people have come to accept the idea that we can stomp out violence? How does that happen?
We can
stomp it out. By violent means, we can get rid of violence, in other words.
Oh, yeah, that's the very Orwellian double thing, for sure. A lot of it is that people, when they see violence or aggression or the use of force, if it's justified in their minds, it becomes not force or not aggression. And that's the way I see it. It's, taxation is a good example. Nobody's forcing you to pay taxes. You owe that money, so they're just collecting. It's like somehow it's like a short circuit in people's minds.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about what would happen if we eliminated the income tax altogether and property tax. Just stand on the principles. Property tax and income tax. And I wanted to, at some point I'm going to have to do a little tirade on that. Just to let people know it's not scary. It's exciting.
Absolutely. Well, let me take off my focus on peace hat for a minute and put on my libertarian.
Okay, well, now to tell you what, they're closing up the music on us. That's all automatic, by the way. It's not me. And Darren, we'll come back after the break, and you get your thoughts together and lay them on us when we come back. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, there's no stopping me, and there's no stopping Darren Wolf, who's on the line with us from FedStock down in Pennsylvania. And Darren, are you still with us?
Yes, indeed.
Now, you wanted to make some points. Let's make them.
Oh, okay. Just real quick, as a libertarian, taking off the focus of peace side, yes. If we could do away with taxation, that would be one way to take away the means that the government has to wage war. Doing things like ending the Fed, take away their ability to create money. Takes away the tools that they have to to buy weapons, to finance war. That would go a long way. Then again, that's not politically neutral. So let me go back to my focus on peace status, okay? I wanted to touch on something. A lot of people out there do things like they support the troops. And they'll even say that they're not actually for the war. They're for peace, but they support the troops. And I think there's a lot of confusion about what support the troops means. In my mind, it means support their mission. I mean, that's not moving against the individuals or the troops, but if you support them as troops, you're supporting their mission. An interesting conversation. I'll keep it brief. An interesting conversation came up in Westchester, Pennsylvania, where you have the Chester County Peace Movement that does a weekly peace vigil. Across the street from them, a few years ago, they started to have a counter demonstration. It was the Chester County Victory Movement. Sometimes they call themselves the American Sheep Zone. I was like the lone libertarian that would stand with the Chester County Peace Movement. I had a Gadsden flag, you know, the Don't Tread on Me flag, and my sign that says End the Fed, End the Wars. A man came across the street. He says to me, "There are Democrats here." I'm like, "What?" He says, "You're standing here with these Democrats that hate America, and they disrespect the troops and all this." And I said, "Well, you know, I don't know about that. I haven't heard them say anything bad about America or anything bad about the troops." As a matter of fact, one of the people that was next to me, her son is in the military. Anyway, so as we started talking, he said, "You know, I'm a libertarian too." He says, "I support Ron Paul." He says, "I want peace, but I would never stand on that side of the street." You know, because of these things that, you know, that he just said. He said, "You should come across the street and stand with us, you know, if we were respecting America and all that." And I said, "No." I said, "There's no way." I said, "I think you have it wrong. If you're with the Chester County Victory Movement, you're supporting the war. You're not supporting peace." I said, "You should come over here on this side." The point being, there's a lot of people out there that it can be brought into the peace movement if we give them a peace movement that they see as worthy of joining.
Well, you know, what I've seen is a lot of people who are, you just definitely illustrated the idea that people are afraid to associate with other people because of the other people's cause or overall cause, you know, and it's amazing because it comes down to pure vanity. They think that if they're seen with those people on the other side of the street, that there's something wrong, even though the people on the other side of the street are in complete agreement with them. It's mind-boggling to see how they've distorted the political process by making people think you're not allowed to associate with somebody who you're against on some issues, but you're with on this issue.
Yeah, so it's divide and conquer.
Absolutely.
This is at a societal level rather than the way empires have done it as a matter of foreign policy. That's why one of the things that I guess would be my dream would be to have one day at a Focus on Peace rally have a communist standing right next to somebody from the John Birch Society.
Wow.
Achieve that, and then have everybody in between with us, the war's over.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. So that's the kind of thing I'm working towards. That's what I want to see Focus on Peace as, is something that truly anybody can join and be comfortable with.
Yeah, who would be pro-war? It's sort of like finding the people who are pro-abortion. Well, they're out there, but they seldom identify themselves in that way.
Well, the idea of being pro-war, well, actually, you know, you mentioned that, what's his name, Jerry Falwell actually wrote an article that was titled, "God is Pro-War."
Whoa.
You know, Jerry Falwell wrote this. I mean, he tried to make the point that if there is a time to go to war. Mm-hmm. His concept of when the time to go to war is, I think it's, you know, kind of lunatic, but you know, he's making that point that, you know, there is such a thing as a just war. Problem is, when you apply the just war doctrine to what the United States is doing, the United States wars are not just; they're wars of aggression. And we're not defending ourselves. You know, we are out there attacking other people. They have a right to defend themselves. I hate to say it. Well, I don't hate to say it, but you know what I mean.
Oh, I agree 100%. It's people are confused, and you know, as a libertarian, we tend to back up and take a very objective point of view or a view of things to see, well, what'd you put in and what comes out the other end, so that we tend to look at results more than the process. And of course, politicians always want to focus our attentions onto the process. of bringing peace or whatever it is today?
Well, it becomes a never-ending process, or you have the never-ending war for, you know, for peace or something like that.
Oh, well, we've got to have a conflict or else a politician is worthless, is totally irrelevant. That's why they will never, ever, ever solve a problem. It's because if they do, they've got to go find another monster they've got to kill. Another reason to get the public all excited and upset. I mean, imagine what would happen if a president walked into the United Nations and declared peace upon all of the world, withdrawing all of our troops right now today. Can you imagine the effect that would have on the world?
It would be fantastic. It would be absolutely fantastic. The whole idea that we need to be strong militarily in order to have peace has been, I think, disproven, you know, many times over. Going into World War I and World War II, it was arms races that preceded the war, not disarmament.
Yeah, so they didn't have to ramp up too much.
Right, exactly. You know, one country building up its military led another country to build up its military, and then before you know it, they had to do something with the militaries, right? They go to war.
You got to use them. I mean, after all, we hired all these people who couldn't find jobs, and that's about 90% of them, and about 10% who are really in it because they believe in America. But the other 90% are people who will tell you very openly, yeah, I couldn't find a job anywhere else, and Uncle Sam was hiring.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, like, there even are people, they say Ron Paul has a lot of support in the military.
Oh, Ron has enormous support in the military, especially overseas, those deployed.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too. You know, that some people in the military can actually be for peace, too. A lot of people don't realize it. I'm sure there are a lot of them. I mean, there are some who actually like war, and they probably, most of them don't. And some people who are in the military actually sincerely want peace.
Well,
I think focus on peace is open to the people in the military, too.
Some of the truly great military leaders, and I'll just go back to an easy one, George Washington. The guy wanted peace, but he knew how to efficiently exercise and implement a war. You know, it was he wasn't a warmonger. He was truly a defender.
You know, that's a very good point. George Washington actually was, just like I think all the other founders, against the idea of what they called the standing army. They recognized the danger of having a large military, you know, sitting around with not much to do, because the next thing you know, they're going to go out and fight a war, or they can even be used domestically against the people themselves.
Well, them boys in their tight little knickers, they actually did some thinking and some looking back over some 5,000 years of recorded human history to come up with this whole unique form of government. And they knew from the get-go that a peaceful nation will be a prosperous nation. And look how far we've come.
And look how the economy is slowing down.
Yeah, the war is growing and the prosperity is dwindling. Well, it's more than dwindling. It's going away. Darren, thank you for being on. That's Darren Wolf from Focus on Peace. We'll be back with Ernest Hancock for the final segment. Darren will get him on the line for us, I know. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. Folks, do it today. Save the children.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence, who's currently down in the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia at FedStock. Ernest, are you on with us?
Yeah, I'm here. You know, it's glad you got to meet with Darren and James. You got a dose of some of the good guys that we're hanging out with here.
Well, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun. So give us an overall. Give the audience kind of a wrap-up on what's happening at FedStock, how they can get involved, and whatever thoughts you have.
You know, FedStock is, gives an opportunity for a lot of people that put a lot of effort into this stuff to enjoy themselves and have fun and have a take on Woodstock and have a lot of bands and music and a parade and speeches and so on. But, you know, there's one thing, one story today that I witnessed that we didn't talk about. There was a gentleman, his name's Fernando, and he's a fireman here in the area, and he has a preparedness meetup that they do various different things. I'm very interested in to have him on next week. Sierra will be booking him, I'm sure. And they talk about growing food and storing food and firearms and preparedness and building your cabins and how this, you know, communications and on and on. And, you know, so a lot of it, you know, we're prepared for what could happen. And from a fireman's perspective, you know, he also does classes on fire itself and what kinds there are and how to survive them. And it's just a lot of things that's just about surviving, what we've been talking about, keep breathing in and out. And so we struck up a conversation, and I noticed that he had a holster on. He was carrying a firearm. Well, of course, it was an open peace event. Now, a lot of people, as Darren would point out, were more of the left persuasion, oh, my goodness, there's a gun. But they didn't really say anything, but there was officers saw that he had a holster, and it became a thing. Because here in Pennsylvania, it's pretty much the same as Arizona for open carry, except here they still have the concealed carry permit thing and all that kind of stuff. So it became a, I'll quit it, you know, are you going to show us your permit? No, I don't, I'm not, I don't have to, it's open yet. So it was interesting to see them going through what we have been going through over the past decade. And as more people do this, just peacefully there to protect themselves and friends and family, it kind of evolves where everybody doesn't see it as a threat anymore, and then they just legalize it. So I was glad to see how professionally he handled the situation. He didn't just curl up underneath the glare of a whole bunch of officers there. Later, I went to talk to the lieutenant that was responsible there, that was the head guy talking to him. And I just pulled him off to the side, had a short conversation with him, that I was from Phoenix, and we had gone through these stages. And he explained himself and that, you know, they can and they do. But one thing that was interesting, here in Pennsylvania, when you go to travel, you go in your car, if you're carrying it openly, you're legal, and they follow you, and the police officer, he made this clear, that if you don't have a concealed carry permit or anything, and you're carrying openly, legally, and you go and you get in your car, boom, the gun is concealed now, and they arrest you. You have to go and take it out, put it in the trunk of your car, then get in your car and leave. And I'm going, wow. Oh, you got to give me an amen that that's BS, man. Come on, you got to throw me one here and say, you know, that's crap. I'm just telling you, you know. So he's kind of giving us the warning that if you're carrying openly in Pennsylvania, certainly in Philadelphia area, if you're carrying open, you're legal, you go get in your car, they can arrest you for having a concealed firearm. Wow. So I thought it was interesting that he would share that with me. But they're going through a lot of the same things that, you know, I've seen all over the country. But I'm glad that Darren's making the effort to try and focus it on, let's not kill people. Let's stop killing people. And then we can worry about all the little details later.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, because what you've just pointed out is the only reason that the cops would do that, you know, call it concealed when they know to play the little game, was to keep control. That's what it's about. They're afraid of being out of control. And I see it in much the way I see the laws, like up in Salt Lake, where they can't serve alcohol in a restaurant, but they do have a little winery up front. And I mean up front in the restaurant. You go pick out your wine, you buy it, you bring it back to the table, because they can't, but the waiter will then pour the wine for you and stuff. And it's just such a big charade.
Well, here in Pennsylvania, that's one thing I remember, this is where Dawn is from, my wife, and they would go shopping for liquor. I mean, they have state liquor stores. I don't know if they still have those. You guys still have that? Yeah, they still do that. And that's just foreign to us. Each state still is different. And it's even a lot different for us. I don't mind states being different, but as a culture or a heritage or the way that they live their lives, not because it's dictated by some central authority. And so it's hard to travel around as much as I do and think that you're going to be treated the same, not regardless of what the law says. It's what the people insist upon. And I've seen the evolution in our efforts, you know, you and I and a lot of the activists there in Arizona, is that, you know, regardless of what the law says, how we're treated is really dictated by what we insist on, how we want to be treated or demand that we be treated.
No question about it. And you've been so active here in Arizona, and I've tagged along a time or two. Just seeing these kinds of attitudes, and I think a lot of it is they just don't know how to act. They don't know how to respond because they're the authority. Whatever they think of, they think is the law.
You know, we get a lot of criticism from certainly people on left and right, anybody that's involved in politics, because, you know, you guys are always there for the show. You're such opportunists. You're always theater. You're on. Of course we are. We don't think that we're not there to change the mind of some legislator that's being lobbied by every, you know, municipal group and special interest of firemen and police and union members of whatever. You know, we know better. We're there advocating for the rights of the individual and changing our culture. Getting people, because these laws and things that we enjoy in Arizona, it's not because we convince some legislator. It's because we convince the people. Legislators don't lead, they follow. And they follow the demands of the people that, you know, make fun of them in the checkout line at the grocery store if they're being stupid all the time. So it's a cultural thing. And I'm glad to see the activism of James Babb and Darren Wolf and a lot of the people here, and Fernando that I met today. These are the people that change culture. And they made an effort. So, you know, I was leery to go because they were focusing on Lockheed Martin. And I'm going, why are you focusing on Lockheed Martin? Like, you know, it's, you think they're the problem?
Yeah.
It's much larger than that. But they made a very good case for, you know, how large they are and what they were doing. And because it's local here, they do it every year on Good Friday. And, you know, it has a heavy Christian theme to it. And it was, but it was very well done. They got a lot of good information I'll share next week. But I can see how it would change. And a lot of the officers of security for Lockheed Martin are there. They're getting an education, too. So I was, and their point was they were, a lot of the more left-oriented people, the Brandywine peace group here, they would just prefer that the activists that came didn't come armed. And the gentleman was very nice. He just said, look, I thought it was an open peace movement. And I, you know, I'm peaceful. I'm just armed.
Yep.
Guarantee it that way. And I remember many times that we've had peace activist gatherings to where the libertarians of the condition that we participate is that we bring our firearms because we know from experience that we're treated differently.
Definitely.
The officers are nicer. They're not as aggressive. And it's a better situation. So we all have our
It is, and it does change from situation to situation, depending on how ramped up the cop is on steroids or something, or stolen pot, like that one guy in the YouTube video says, we're dying because we stole some pot out of evidence and my wife and I baked it up. It's a crazy world. Ernest, any final comments as we wrap up the program?
Well, thanks for helping out, Barry. I'm glad you came in, and fortunately, you don't live too far away, so, you know, we can always tap on you. I'll be back late Saturday night. We'll be back on the radio Monday live with all the good.
All righty. Well, folks, we're going to wrap it up. This is Barry Hess sitting in for Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence. And do me a favor, declare yours today.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already moved. Tour.